Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm broadcasting from my basement out here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado. Adam McManus with me. He is the well-known host for The Worldview in 5 Minutes. And he's with me. Adam, good to have you.
We are both shut in and abiding by government orders, apparently.
Yes, and we've got the 6-foot rule. In fact, technically, we've got the 1,600-mile rule operating, because we don't often let people know this, but Adam's in Texas. I'm in Colorado. But Adam, I wanted to talk a little bit about our current situation. I was with my wife this morning and commented that we live in an insane asylum, that I'm less and less connected with the world's thinking on so many different levels. And I was thinking of this list my father sent me. I added something to it. Let me give you something of a long list that outlines the snowflakeism, the insanity, the abandonment to a debased mind that so characterizes the world we live in today. And I want to tie this in with the response to COVID-19, the coronavirus. So let me go through this list, and I want you to get a flavor for this.
All right.
If a dude pretends to be a woman, you're required to pretend with him. That's the society we live in. Crazy. It's crazy.
That's right.
You remember that in the 1980s? I mean, I'm only 55 years old, but this is a different world, Adam.
I remember well when Bruce Jenner appeared with, I believe it was Diane Sawyer, for an ABC 2020 interview, and he was there on the couch. He looked like he had lost his beard. He had long hair pulled back in a ponytail, and he said he was about to make a big transition. And I thought, the world is really changing before my very eyes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was expecting that in 1976 when they saw Bruce Jenner on their Wheaties box. But things are so crazy. It's just crazy. It's just crazy. Russians influencing our elections are bad, but illegal Mexicans voting in our elections, that's a good thing. Or, again, these are just things that have become normative in our society today. Kill a baby if you want to, but go to jail if you spank a child. Again, you see the tensions, the contradictions, the internal incoherence of the modern mind. And I think people need to understand we live in an irrational world, friends. Here's one more. Sexualizing children is bad in some contexts, but 11-year-old drag queens, that's all good. Sexualizing women on the movie screens, just fine. But the producers that sexualize women in their private lives, they go to jail. That's the world we live in today. And I think people need to understand how crazy. Kill babies all you want, just don't skip out on your child's vaccinations, or you could go to jail or be fined. $5 billion for border security, too expensive, but $1.5 trillion for free health care for illegals, no problem. You see the contradictions here, don't you?
I do. It's almost as if we are simmering in that pot on the stove along with that frog, and he doesn't know it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter until ultimately he's a goner. And that's what's happened to our society.
Couple others, friends, to describe our current situation. If you cheat to get into college, you go to prison. But if you cheat to get into the country, you go to college for free. People say there's no such thing as gender, but they're demanding a female president. Or we see other countries moving socialist. They collapse, and it seems like a great plan for us. Feminists want women treated equal to men, yet they want to maintain the female-only sports teams. And then transgender activists want transgendered men treated equal to women on female-only sports teams, while the rest of the team argues that it's just not fair except for those who are going along with the pretense. And so, again, friends, this is the world we live in. And these things are accepted, by and large, by the ruling elite of our country. Here's one more. Quarantining those actually infected by HIV/AIDS, which, by the way, has killed 35 million people, is utterly rejected by the left, while quarantining everybody for COVID-19 that has resulted in 8,000 deaths is considered perfectly normal. So again, friends, there are internal contradictions. There's incoherence in the mind of the modern. And so as you consider these things, I want you to ask yourself, is this a sane society? And will this society make the right decisions when it comes to the coronavirus? Now, I'm questioning our leaders. I'm questioning our leaders. I question our universities. I question our scientists. I question our politicians. I'm questioning everybody. Why? Because they refuse wisdom. Because the beginning of wisdom and knowledge is not the fear of God. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Common sense is gone and God has given them up to a debased mind. Do you really think a society that doesn't fear God is going to make good decisions? Yeah, I think what's happening here is the world is operating by fear, the fear of disease and death, the fear of man, the fear of public opinion. And here are the verses that went through our minds this morning as we were talking in our family. Proverbs 28:1, the wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. And man, if that doesn't characterize Christians in this day, they're in trouble. Apparently too much fear, too much of the fear of man, too much of the fear of death, too much of a fear of the coronavirus. And Proverbs 29:25, the fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe. And Jesus as well said in Matthew 10, do not fear those who kill the body, but are unable to kill the soul. Rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. This is so basic. I think people forget, Adam, how basic it is to fear God first and foremost. If you don't fear God, you're going to be operating out of something of a irrational thinking. And that's what's going on, especially a society that's this far away from any kind of a sense of God's presence, God's sovereignty, God's judgment on the nation. These subjects are not even touched upon by our leaders, as far as I can tell.
One example of the craziness which we cited recently at the Worldview is how the Los Angeles County Sheriff called for the closing of gun stores, saying that they were non-essential. Yet, obviously, people have legitimate concerns that as certain supplies or products are less available or they become more desperate, the criminals who are already fully engaged in criminality will be further emboldened to perhaps break mm-hmm. in or trespass on one's property, threatening livelihoods and lives. And so to suggest that, you know, that's mm-hmm. a legitimate answer to close down a gun store is preposterous. On the other hand, I was glad to see that Janet Folger Porter of Faith to Action was leading the charge with about 150 conservative Christian leaders in favor of calling on every governor of the state to close down the abortion mills as non-essential. The one in Ohio, the attorney general there, as we reported on the Worldview, indicated that they were doing so in order to preserve the protective equipment like the face masks. But the attorney general in my state, Ken Paxton, said that, no, this is, you know, to kill a baby in the womb is not essential. And so I'm hoping that the 48 other attorneys generals and governors will see the wisdom there. But we're seeing some very odd things happen in these anxious times with the COVID-19 virus as the primary focal point of all of our minds.
Well, certainly worldviews affect policy, and that is what is going on. And we have draconian health orders in our state and certain stay-at-home requirements in counties and cities with long lists of exemptions for essential work and services, which, by the way, include marijuana dispensaries and liquor stores still opened, but not for churches. Churches non-essential. The spiritual work of the church conspicuously absent the long lists of exemptions for the stay-at-home requirements in our state. Why? Because the spiritual is non-essential in the minds of the secular state. And friends, worldviews matter. Worldviews matter. And there are points at which you need to break the law. I'm not telling you what or where or when to do it, but it's a matter of personal conscience. It's a matter of family jurisdiction and individual church jurisdiction. When it comes to whether to oppose the state, we ought to obey God rather than men. And when we are restricted from spiritual exercise that is essential, then I think we need to oppose the state on issues like that. Now, of course, we submit as long as we can to the laws. Jesus told us, lest we offend them, pay the tax. And he said, agree with your adversary quickly while you're in the way with him. But when push comes to shove, you have to break the law that forbids some preaching, some prayer, especially the prayer for the sick. There are points at which people will have to violate state law. And so I guess the main thing that I want people to realize is don't mindlessly follow the crowd. Don't mindlessly follow state mandates. You need to think about it. You need to be wise. Don't trust your leaders to have absolute wisdom in every area. And don't act in fear of the virus like everybody else is doing. Act in the fear of God, first and foremost. So calling for rationality, friends, calling for people to reassess risks, calling for people to compare the risks of certain viruses to other viruses, calling people to understand that there are certain values that are important to maintain, even in the state of pandemics. And so here we are today, friends, thrashing around for the sensible, the rational, and the sane in an insane world. And in a moment, a sensible article from The Federalist on The Generations broadcast. Stay with us. Friends, listen. There is nothing families need more than godly husbands and fathers, spiritual men, praying men, men who are strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Oh, that God would raise up stronger men, gentle, faithful shepherds, covenant keepers, men who won't quit, men who stay in the battle, men who persevere when the going gets tough, sacrificial lovers, robust men, not snowflakes. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. So the apostle tells us, quit ye like men, be strong. That's why the Shepherds Conference each year in my home here in Elizabeth, Colorado. Let me tell you, it's the best fellowship, the best worship, the best encouragement, the best exhortation, 5 days of immersive study in the Word of God, prayer and fellowship at my place out here on the eastern plains of Colorado, September 28th through October 2nd this year. Here's the caveat. There are only 45 spots open. Reserve now at generations.org/shepherds. That's generations.org/shepherds. We are back on The Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, Adam McManus as well. And today I want to draw in this Federalist article from Ben Dominic called Predictions, What Will America Look Like After the Wuhan Coronavirus? What will be the long-term impact of the Wuhan virus on the economy, higher education, homeschooling, jobs, Congress, and American politics as we know it? And friends, this is not over. Our economy is a house of cards. As everybody knows, we've been talking about this for the last 18 years of this broadcast. The American economy is a house of cards. And this unemployment issue is going to snowball into something. And this will require a fair amount of faith. And we must be rooted in the fear of God, in hope in eternity, and not hope in our 401k plans. And we better be spiritually ready for this, especially as pastors, fathers and mothers, leaders in homes, churches. Let's be ready for the fallout. This is a big domino kicking down the international economic dominoes. And so as Christians, as Christian leaders, let's move on in faith. Let's be sure that we are shoring up our faith. Our prayer meetings should be full, absolutely packed. Our online Zoom-based prayer meeting should be packed out. There should be a massive increase in faith right now to prepare for what is to come. So that's first and foremost. Ben Dominic doesn't get into the spiritual aspects of this much, but I would say that from the outset. Friends, you better be ready. And we better be ready. We better be prepared spiritually for the difficulties, the trials and tribulations that will be facing us. May God increase in us the faith, the hope in eternity, and of course, love for one another in the church. We need to ratchet up love for each other in the church by tenfold to make it through the upcoming months and years that are facing us. I'll say that from the outset. But this article from Ben Dominic, very interesting, Life After Corona. As listeners to my various media hits know, I've been generally critical of the media coverage of the Wuhan coronavirus, which I believe was far more interested in engendering panic than informing the public and so forth and so on. But he says, here's what we're looking at. First, he says, the death of college. This will create massive funding problems for higher education, particularly the overpriced middle tier of non-state schools They will seek a bailout, which Congress should deny and which most Americans will oppose, given their long burgeoning resentment at the cost of a middling education. Schools that didn't sufficiently invest in online learning will get burned. Okay, so that was his take. And we have said this from the outset for many, many years, that it's time for homeschoolers especially to get out of the box when it comes to higher education. We've pushed very, very hard on mentorships as a really cool way to work our children into the macroeconomy, a very, very good way to merge into a macroeconomy. But friends, the college bubble also has been waiting to burst for a long time. When was the first time everybody was talking about the college bubble, Adam? Was it 10, 12, 14 years ago?
I couldn't tell you, but I do know this, that when I meet the college students today in normal ebb and flow of the former life prior to COVID-19, when I was able to chat with them in line at Walmart or wherever we were, what have you, I have been increasingly disturbed at their inability to articulate themselves, combined with an inability to understand basic American history, world history. You see these conservative activists go on campus all the time with their YouTube videos and their cameras asking basic questions about the Constitution, about our founding fathers, about who even is the vice president or some of the key cabinet secretary positions. And the college students on campus today just do not know. They're clueless. And yet they're being brainwashed with all kinds of politically correct babble. These high-priced, non-state, middle-tier colleges aren't doing, seemingly, the students much good.
Well, the college debt bubble is through the ceiling. I just double-checked online and found that, you know, it's 2007. College debt was hitting about $500,000. So what is that, about 11, 12 years ago now? College debt is at $1.5 trillion. So to think that this thing has increased threefold, 300% just since 2007, I mean, that's what else has increased 300% since 2007? I can't think of anything that has increased threefold or 300% since 2007. College debt through the ceiling, friends, threefold. In fact, it makes up something like 7 to 8% of the gross national income, up from 1 or 2% 10-12 years ago. So friends, this college debt bubble is out of control. It doesn't appear that there's going to be much payback on these college loans, from what I can tell. And the stimulus bill, also the $2 trillion bill that the Congress is working on, does not include a student payoff. It's only delaying payments for 6 months, from what I understand. So, in other words, Congress is not going to do these college kids any favor as we get into this next recession with this massive unemployment ratio coming up, 20, 25, 30% unemployment, as expected by the Federal Reserve and other pundits, leaders. So, college debt bubble up to $1.5 trillion. And friends, this is not the time to get into new colleges. It's time to get out of the box. And I think more online YouTube university stuff and of course mentorship will be the future for the American youth.
Also trade schools. I mean, we're not always looking at quote unquote white collar jobs. I mean, there are good incomes to be made as an electrician, as a plumber, as a mechanic. These are trades that are not going away. There will always be a need for them, and you need to go to trade school to become accomplished at them. They do not require college. So everyone does not need to go to college, even online.
Well, friends, this article from Ben Dominic considers life after Corona. Of course, the recession that we're dealing with right now is probably the pin to pop the bubble. Certainly the domino to kick over the increase in college debt that we've seen over the last 11 to 12 years. Also, here's what Ben is saying concerning the future. As we face this coronavirus and the economic fallout, he says in-person events will be rare in the future, and when they are held, they will be more intense and defiant. He says he expects something of a revolt of the religious. Consider California's stay-at-home order issued yesterday. It prompted LA's terrible mayor to threaten to enforce it at gunpoint, et cetera, et cetera. Being confined to their homes is very new for American Christians, one of the few remaining major cohorts that consistently sees each other every week of the year and has a rhythm built into the fellowship. So he says there's outrage amongst Christians, and he thinks that the end result will be that the Christians will insist upon gathering themselves together. And of course, when the smoke clears on this, I hope, it is my desire, that there will be something of a huge interest in the gathering of the saints together for worship. I'm hoping that somehow worship will be even more important than the marijuana stores, the 4-H, the athletic events and such. And I'm hoping that people will turn back to God and see that the worship of God is even more important than the marijuana dispensaries.
He does predict that there will be an immediate run on the gyms as people have no doubt gained weight as they've been staying at home and probably not eating as healthily. I saw one stat that said that the number of chips and danishes and cookies and cakes is just going up almost exponentially in terms of what people are consuming. But I did want to touch on the impact of the college education and how overpriced it is and these bailouts. Ben Dominic of The Federalist says there will come a point at which libertarians and small government conservatives in America will view these bailouts as what they are, theft from future generations. Last time round, it turned into a Tea Party revolt. It'll be interesting to see what will happen this time around in terms of the outrage, especially if the number of deaths is much lower than predicted and people are upset, as the Wall Street Journal noted, that we threw away my small business, my portfolio, and our children's future for this. There's some simmering anger out there, no doubt, especially as this comes to a head and dissipates.
He says it'd be extremely difficult and a long-term task for the restaurant industry to recover, so forth and so on. Unemployment obviously will be big. The problem with the bailouts was that they weren't big enough for you to keep your job. That's the message many will understand. And of course, you know, throwing a $2,400 check at 200 million Americans is not going to fix the economy. I'm hoping that almost everybody understands that. But he also points out nationalism will be back. He says he expects that we'll be entering a period of the most sustained isolationism we've seen in a century. Yesterday, the State Department told Americans not to travel abroad with their highest ranked warning in history. More Americans will have to have no desire to risk going abroad for the immediate future, nor will they want their sons or daughters there, and so forth. And then on education, he adds one more thing. I wonder how many of them, having been reluctant homeschoolers at first, will find they actually prefer this approach, and that Junior has learned so much more in the past 3 months than he did in the prior six. I expect a significant growth in homeschooling, either individually or as a community, and a concurrent growth of curriculum, resources, and internet-based schooling functions in tandem, which is what we've been pushing for a long time. And so there's some upsides to this, friends. A decentralization of power, a decentralization away from large institutional education, and an encouragement to homeschooling. Now, what, 62 million American children being homeschooled? That's extraordinary. That's something that I don't think I would have predicted a year ago, that the homeschooling movement would have moved from about 3 million to 63 million inside of about 2 weeks in the month of March. That's really blown us away, my friends. And I'm guessing that our curriculum offerings will be something of a drop in the bucket for what will be needed for Americans that are looking for a God-centered, Christ-centered, biblical worldview-based, which is the only kind of worldview that presents the truth and provides a decent form of knowledge, a form of knowledge that is true, that is effective, that is appropriate, and that will yield something of a good life and a good preparation for life and eternity for your children. So, friends, we're hoping that this will be something of the paddle treatment to the American mind, and so parents will begin to see that the secular schools didn't do the job academically, spiritually, emotionally, or in any other way. And so I'm hoping that this will be something of an improvement to the American mind, to the American home, to the American family, to the American church. So to summarize, death of college, or at least the brick and mortar form, a huge test of faith for churches. Will we insist on reestablishing fellowship and gatherings in an otherwise isolated world? How about home-cooked meals, homeschooling, nationalism, and a restart of an economy, maybe an honest economy? You know, oftentimes it's crisis that moves people back towards a proper way of living, whether it be in education, economics, ecclesiastical sphere, or any other way. So, you know, all things work together for good, right, Adam?
That's right. And Amy has been, especially my wife, has been intrigued by what some of her friends who choose to put their children in public school have said about the so-called homeschooling they're doing. You're not really comparing apples to apples in terms of, A, the curriculum that the public school is using versus the curriculum that homeschool Christian parents in particular use, and B, there's a lot of busy work surrounding what the public school is requiring them to do online versus homeschool, which I think is more meaty and substantive and less frivolous. My fear is that the people that are objecting, the public school parents who are objecting to this wonderful time with their own children as they are either working from home or they are laid off temporarily from their jobs, is a kind of a false notion of what homeschooling is. My wife, even as she was biking around our neighborhood with her three children, Honor, Mercy, and Valor, talked to a manager of a supermarket and his wife, and they have older children in their household, three of them, and they were both pulling their hair out. They said, I don't know how you do this. How do you teach your children? How do you? It's just driving us crazy. You know, I've been a little taken aback, even from our Christian peers who place their children in public school, about how excited they are about the pickup of the public school time so that the kids can be off and out of their hair and they can be back to their jobs. It is an interesting reality check. I think it gives us an opportunity to really compare and contrast what the homeschool curriculum is and how it's Christ-centered versus a lot of the busy work as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, I'm not kidding myself. I'm not thinking that the homeschooling movement is going to settle out at 63 million students at this point. But I will say that I think there'll be a bump, and I'm hoping for and praying for a significant bump, especially of those Christian parents who see there is an obligation to raise their children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, that the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge and science and history in every course, absolutely essential. And is it possible the Lord raised this ministry up for such a time as this? Especially as we are massively increasing our online summits, and we'll be talking to hundreds of thousands of parents and families over the next couple of months. And friends, here's the question. As we restart our economies, as God gives us a chance to hit the restart button on education, our family life, on church life, where do we start? Well, start with the Word of God. Start with the book of Proverbs. That's why we do our Proverbs Bible study guides for kids and for families. These family Bible study guides, we have three of them. If you want to give your children good wisdom in an age where, yeah, there's all kinds of irrationality out there, but you want to form them on the foundation of God's wisdom, get the book of Proverbs. Get the family Bible study guides on the book of Proverbs. We got a three-part series there. Also a little workbook for younger kids. All available at generation.org. Also, you can get Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. If you're just starting out, you know somebody's just starting out with homeschooling or a Christian worldview approach to education, grab a copy of Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child for that purpose. And these resources available at generations.org. That's generations.org. Get your friends and family members to go to generations.org in order to start the homeschooling journey and keep it going. This is Kevin Swanson and Adam McManus, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.